Okay, now we move on. William Thomas is a name that should be familiar to you by now, if you're even a casual listener to this program. He is an investigator and has, in recent months, or I don't know, for about a year now maybe, been investigating contrails that he does not believe are contrails. You know, the normal things that air jets leave in the air and generally persist for a little while and then sort of fade out, usually rather quickly. Well, he thinks that what we have on our hands in some cases are not contrails at all, but chemtrails, as in chemicals being sprayed on us for whatever reason. And so we're going to kind of do an update on that and a lot more for you tonight. William Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Art. Pleasure to be back with you.
Yep, good to have you. I understand a lot has been happening.
Yes, particularly recently. It looks like we're right back into it, Art. As you recall, it was this time last year, last November, that the chemtrail sightings and the illnesses really picked up, and we're right back there again.
Right. No, I agree. For example, just let me read you two I got today. Art, contrails. My brother is a licensed investigator, watched with his wife 8 planes laying contrails over Carson Valley today. Went from sunny and clear to cloudy and overcast. Both were taken sick with sore throats. That's one. Here's another. Arizona, our skies. This morning the air is cool, visibility high. It starts out so blue, the Arizona sky, it's written as a poem. As the day progresses, white chemtrails appear. People have car windows down, totally unaware. Within hours, many grid patterns form. These are not clouds. It is not the norm. By late afternoon, my eyes begin to tear. The blue sky turned gray. Now evening is near. As the sun sets and another day draws to a close, I'm coughing, sneezing, and have a runny nose. What have they done to our sky so blue? People are getting sick, and it isn't the flu. It's evening now, and the chem planes have flown so far. I look into the night sky, and I can't see a single star. Tomorrow's weather report states it's going to be clear. Is our own government what we should have to fear? That's from Mesa, Arizona. So what the hell's going on?
A lot of news spraying, and it appears that we are going to have some answers tonight. We're a little bit closer, I think, to finding out who is behind this. Interesting, you mentioned sore throats in your correspondence there.
Right.
I'm recovering tonight from a sore throat, which I got yesterday after very, very heavy spraying here. I haven't seen it this heavy. I live on a little island, Art, on the west coast of Canada, and yesterday was complete saturation with crossing tracks and X patterns.
Right.
The day before, we had over 100 chemtrails counted in Victoria, the capital of British Columbia, about 30 miles from here.
All right. For those who may not be familiar, let's once again delineate between what you call a chemtrail and what most of us all our lives have known as contrails, those white puffy things left by jets as they traverse the upper atmosphere, or actually the middle atmosphere at 550 miles per hour or so.
I got a perfect representation of the difference yesterday at twilight after a day of heavy spraying. A commercial airliner came over, and it was trailing a pencil-thin contrail or condensation trail that faded very quickly behind that jet, like the wake behind a boat.
Sure.
These are ice crystals that are formed by the heat of jet engines and sometimes off wingtips above 30,000 feet, usually, depending on temperature. The chemtrail phenomena is quite different. We are looking at widening white plumes of chemical trails, often coming off the horizontal stabilizer, the tail parts of aircraft, where, as an airline pilot said last summer in Aspen when I was giving a chemtrails presentation, this pilot stood up and said, those are not contrails. That's coming off the tail of this airplane. So we have something coming off a different part of the aircraft, not the engines, lingering for hours, spreading out to obscure the sky. And unlike ice crystal condensation trails, many, many reports of illness in the wake of the sprain, and now it looks like something new.
Hey, William, I don't know if you've had the opportunity. If you haven't, I want you to have the opportunity. Somebody sent me a picture of what appears to be a large commercial jet, and something is coming out of this jet at a location that has nothing to do with the wingtips or the engines. It's doing one of two things. Either it's dumping fuel, obviously, or it's dispensing chemtrails. Have you seen that photograph on my website?
I haven't seen it, Art. I'll simply quickly note that fuel dumping takes place at the wingtips of a commercial airliner.
Do you have a computer you can get online with?
Not while I'm on the phone.
Not while you're on the phone. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, but tell me where these plumes are coming from, Art.
Keith, would you please put that picture in the newest items for tonight, if you're listening? Hopefully he is. They're coming from, well, when the photo gets up there, I'll describe it specifically to you, all right?
Great.
In the meantime, it's not coming from either the wingtips or the engine. I can tell you that, and it's obviously spraying something. Now, sure, I suppose it could be, you say, though, dumping fuel would be done at the wingtip?
That's right, unless it was a KC-135 tanker, and it would dump fuel in an emergency from its main fuel probe under the tail, but again, not at the tips of the tail.
Well, in that case, we have a problem, and I've got a really damning photograph, if that's true. So that's true of most jets, then?
Absolutely true.
All right. What do we know, if anything, more now about what seems to be in these chemtrails? We had reports, for example, of spider-like stuff falling out of the sky, spider-like, mind you, and then people even getting samples of it in bottles and it virtually disappearing within hours. So what do we know?
We know from earlier clean samples, that is, samples taken off uncontaminated surfaces, that we are dealing in some cases with Pseudomonas bacteria and a host of fungus that can lead to upper respiratory problems. These are from low-level sprays or dumps of gel-like material. We do not have samples of actual chemtrails taken at altitude. I got up in a light plane last summer and went chasing after these chemtrails. We were only able to get up to 10,000 feet in this Cessna. We had very sophisticated sampling gear on board, but the pilot estimated the contrail he thought we were chasing was at about 19,000 feet. So we couldn't get close enough to get a good sample. We need to get up there in the higher altitudes and get samples from these aircraft. Having said that, we do have fresh samples that actually have been looked at by the Ontario Ministry of Environment here in Canada. After some 250 people signed a petition in Española, Ontario, after being heavily sprayed last March.
Oh, really? And what, pray tell, did they determine?
Well, they determined that it was not a big deal. They found mica and aluminum in that sample and carbon. The Air Force says it uses carbon for weather modification, and the mica and aluminum and quartz material seem to have been components of chaff. Chaff, of course, is used to jam radars and heat-seeking missiles used by the military. I'll remind listeners that Espanol, Ontario is not a U.S. military exercise area, and yet Air Force KC-135s were photographed over Española. A C-130 Hercules, at least one of them, unmarked, was seen spraying a reddish material at very low altitudes. And we'll come back to those C-130s in a minute. But I just note that the chaff can linger for many, many hours in the air, and it's a perfect material to track dispersion patterns from the spraying, and I believe that's what was going on in Española, where there was an outbreak of illnesses and people had goo spattering their patios and rooftops.
Well, William, you've been at this for a long time now, and of course we always ask the same question, and I'm going to ask it again. What do you think they're doing? What's your best guess?
I can only conclude from the evidence of many hundreds, in fact, we're in the thousands now, Art, of reports from people taking ill, particularly this newest component of psychological and emotional disturbances linked to the chemtrail spraying, that these are deliberate, repeat, deliberate attacks. For what purpose? We can only speculate, given, again, the symptomology of people, their illness and their apathy. I can only say, first off the top, obviously meant to suppress people, to keep them preoccupied and distracted and unaware of what's going on, and perhaps to sicken people just to the point of apathy, given the major event coming up January 1st and in the weeks beyond. I'm speaking here of Y2K and perhaps social breakdown. And now I've reluctantly gone the next step.
Well, wait a minute. That would seem to suggest that you think they're doing something to, in effect, calm the people. If I don't even know if that's the right word, calm the people. Put them in a state where they're somewhat apathetic and they're unlikely to become unruly. Is that a way to put it?
It's a good way to put it. I don't know this for fact. I certainly do know this from reports that these are exactly the effects that are now being reported by people in my area and across the United States. That there seems to be, as William Wallace told me recently, you remember this man from Washington State launched me on this odyssey last January.
Right.
I just talked to him, and he said that he is convinced that there is some mind-altering purpose with the spraying. Another person used those same words, saying perhaps it's a major reason for it, counting off short-term memory loss, apathy, inability to concentrate, and depression. And this person said that she felt that her depression is not spiritual, circumstantial, or psychological, but for lack of a better word, artificial. I just talked to someone in Santa Fe last night. They have had very, very heavy spraying over the past few weeks. She went into work yesterday, Art, and everyone was feeling woozy. She said they couldn't put two thoughts together. They couldn't concentrate. Everyone thought they were coming down with flu, but it dissipated the following day.
God, that's ominous.
Gone. So we are now seeing an emotional, psychological component to this, including low-level and sometimes acute anxiety attacks that we haven't been seeing before.
All right. All right, William, hold on. Now, there is about the worst scenario I've heard yet. Spraying for some kind of control of emotion, or if you want to stretch it there, mind control. Something to, you know, keep the masses under control should a situation arise. Man, I'll tell you, only in America. I'm Art Bell. Once again, here is William Thomas. William, welcome back. Did you hear that fax I read from Dr. Boghossian?
I did, yes, and I've been tracking this, both the Plum Island, as you mentioned, and this this new virus, yeah.
Well, I don't know a damn thing about Plum Island, so we'll have to talk about that. And there's some, yeah, there's a new virus, some horrendous new flu virus, they're saying, is out there, and it's apparently killed some people in Hong Kong. And
that's right.
They're saying it came from pigs, and this could be one of the really bad ones, and so forth and so on. It scares the hell out of me.
Yes, me too. I am concerned, however, with this new, I have to come back to this, Art, this psychological, emotional component to
yes.
chemtrails.
Yes.
I just have two quick additions, and one is very important, a bit of documentation to back up this observation I'm making. First, I had a phone call from a friend in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Now, that area and Aspen are being heavily sprayed. The conversation was so interesting, I took some notes. This is what she said, and I think this is going to resonate with a lot of listeners tonight. people are acting weird. People are acting strange. People don't have really good mental health. Everybody's sick. More people are down. Things are just not right. Erratic behavior. It's not like life used to be. It's like a struggle for people, not just financial. It's in all ways, spiritual, emotional, physical.
I agree.
She said people are embattled. It's leading to separation. She has a lifelong friend, like a sister, she says, we haven't spoken in 2 weeks. Now, wait for this. Here's the clincher. Dr. Clito D. Giovannani of the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, in the October 99 issue of American Journal of Psychiatry, writes that nerve agents, can cause depression, insomnia, impaired thinking, and, thinking of the top of your show tonight, antisocial thoughts. G. Giovanni says, biological weapons can diminish the ability to think clearly and produce depression, irritability, and hallucinations. And Art, I think that's what's going on with chemtrails today.
Well, I always get to this point, but I ask myself, why would our own government want to do this to its own people? I mean, if you do that, you're going to kill productivity. You're going to end up with maybe what's going on in Seattle, went on in Honolulu and elsewhere. You're going to end up with all kinds of antisocial behavior and sick people, and that's going to cost the economy dearly. And so what would be the motivation of a government to ruin its own tax base?
I agree with you, and that's been a real stumbling block for me until very recently. I have spoken and written a book on Y2K, an updated book, and I speak on it in communities. And it appears to me, Art, that if we are facing a possible, and from the government and military point of view, probable social breakdown leading to the imposition of martial law, that alone is going to really put the damper, to say the least, on the economy. And the answer to your question is, if a government is fearful enough, it would rather suppress its population than deal with widespread social unrest that is, again, going to throw a monkey wrench into the economy anyway. That's one possible answer to your question. The other answer is a physical component to the sprain, the illness component. And I'm afraid that's going to lead us into some darker corners tonight.
So they would, I guess what you're saying is they would go so far as to make the population, in your opinion, sick, disabled, unable to think straight, unable to respond as they otherwise might to an emergency situation.
Well, people can still function and are functioning. People are still going to work and doing their jobs. They don't seem very aware of what's going on overhead or what's right in front of their own noses. I think it's more than denial now.
Well, they wouldn't be. You know what? I'm not different than most Americans, and I would not even think to consider that my own government was spraying me with anything that would cause ill effects. Much less mind control or anything like that. I mean, it's not something that the average American is ready to accept because it's never happened. And so you don't even think about it. My God, crap coming from the sky to make you sick?
Oh, but it has happened, and that's the point. You have two in-depth congressional investigations with much documentation showing that Americans have been sprayed with biological stimulants since the 1940s. It's been going on for more than 50 years. It has happened. People can read my book, Bringing the War Home, and I guess from what you're saying, be shocked to learn, again, with formidable documentation, just what their government is and has been capable of. My other book, Scorched Earth, documents these biological warfare programs against the American people and all kinds of experiments, again, taken out on the American public. So there's plenty of precedent, and there's even a pattern for what we're seeing today.
Well, I'll tell you what I do know to be true. My government, your government, the American government, the Canadian government, all of them, when we are at war, we propagandize our own people as heavily as Saddam Hussein propagandizes his people. Now, I watched that occur during the Gulf War, number one and two, and I watched outright lies being told to the American people to justify certain actions, and they call that propaganda, but that is directed against their own people, and that's something I know we do, and we do it as much as the Russians do it, and any other, and people don't realize they're being propagandized, but later you find out the stuff you were told at the time that seemed to justify whatever we were doing simply was absolutely incorrect. It was untrue. And so they do that.
They're doing it now in New York City with the spraying of a nerve agent, malathion, on the population, telling people it is harmless. It is harmless to children, knowing full well it is anything but harmless. In fact, breaking the law by uttering that very statement.
All right. There's this West Nile thing in New York, right? It comes, my understanding is, birds get it, mosquitoes bite them, then they bite people, and people get West Nile. West Nile has never before been here. It's some sort of modification of West Nile. Some people are suspicious, and they think it's been modified in a lab. What do you think?
I think it's been modified in a lab. I've been working with co-researcher Patty Doyle for weeks on this story. It's the only explanation that makes sense. This mystery virus has been identified, if we can use that term, three different times. First is St. Louis encephalitis, and then, oh gee, it's killing exotic birds in the Bronx Zoo. It can't be that. Must be West Nile. Then the CDC said, well, it's West Nile-like, but actually it's a genetic subtype. We've never seen it before here in the United States. We've never seen West Nile. Funny that we have an outbreak in a single borough in Queens all of a sudden. But gee, this virus has been genetically mutated. I guess they meant naturally mutated. Of course, it could have been genetically engineered. And now they're saying, oh, well, actually, it looks like it's Japanese encephalitis. Well, guess what? We have an exotic animal disease lab initially set up in the 50s as a biowarfare lab on a little place called Plum Island. About 840-acre island, just 2 miles off Long Island.
Oh.
And they have been, for years, experimenting with, yes, Japanese encephalitis. And guess what? They have had, in recent years, 10 dead birds outside one of their labs. Now, the idea was that the offshore winds would blow any errant pathogens out to sea away from the mainland, but birds, of course, can fly upwind and fly to the mainland. Given the many accidents the lab has been cited for in recent years, given the dead birds, given the Japanese encephalitis experiments that scared one contractor at least off the island, as he told the Washington Post, it looks like, very possibly, this genetically modified virus got loose from Plum Island, took wing literally, landed in a single district in Queens, and now, as you're well aware, that outbreak is spreading down the coast through Connecticut, Maryland. It may be as far afield as Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, nobody, of course, could figure out what the hell it was, and still really they don't definitively know what it is. And they said it's never been here before, and they have no understanding at all of how it could have come here to North America, particularly in the area you're talking about, where we all know it began. So I'm afraid what you're saying makes some potential sense.
It made enough sense for the New York Times to run a map showing the proximity of Plum Island to New York City. It's about, 100 miles to the actual epicenter of the outbreak. A crow can travel that in a single day, two at the most. We have 7 people dead now, hundreds ill, people very frightened and reasonably so. We have the amino acid sequence for West Nile, according to the man who invented that sequence. He says, I don't understand why they can't identify this thing unless it really isn't West Nile.
I had a report from Linda Moulton Howe, and she said, the mosquitoes will, when it gets cold, go dormant.
Yes.
And then they will stay dormant through the cold weather, and nobody knows what the hell is going to happen when the weather gets warm again. And it could be either better or it could be far worse. We got that warning from Linda.
The officials of New York City and State would agree with her. They're very concerned. Also, they're concerned the birds will fly into warmer climates to the south and continue to incubate that virus throughout the winter in warmer regions. And now, Patty Doyle and I have just learned that Plum Island is a biohazard level 5 lab. It's
five.
The only such lab in the United States.
Five?
I have never heard of a 5.
No, I haven't either. 4 was like the worst. Like Ebola, they would have in a level 4 lab, right?
That's right. That's Outbreak and Preston's Hot Zone book and people wearing spacesuits.
Yeah.
Being careful not to prick their fingers because these pathogens in a level 4 have no known antidote.
All right. We're probably going to have to get Patty Doyle on, but in a minute, I think we're going to get the guest we have on the pilot story, okay?
America.
Stay right there. William Thomas is my guest, and... Only in America, right? Are you listening? Well, I guess I better warn you, a lot of what you're hearing is obviously going to be, and is, very disturbing. So, if you're a parent, exercise your parental prerogative, please. Somebody else on as well, Dave Peterson, in a moment, and we're going to talk about a pilot.
You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing.
Here's a couple of things that I think you ought to hear.
You keep thinking that you'll never get burned.
Oh, this is the line. You'll never get burned.
I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows, you ain't had time to learn.
As our government. All right. The following comes so that you might track it, just in case you don't believe me. The following two stories I'll tell you the source of. Electronic Telegraph, story one. Fear of flu epidemic grows as deadly virus spreads. A dangerous new strain of flu that could trigger a worldwide epidemic has broken out in Hong Kong. Like, they say, now listen, like the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, that killed around 20 million people worldwide. We have a lot more people now worldwide. You've got to think about that. The Hong Kong strain is believed to have jumped from pigs to humans. Health officials were alerted after a 10-month-old girl was admitted to a hospital last month, and so forth and so on and so on. And so we've got to watch out for that. The following comes from the United Kingdom News, the UK News. Listen to this one. The headline is MOD admits airborne germ warfare tests by Andrew Gilligan and Rob Evans. Large quantities of germ warfare stimulants were sprayed from aircraft over several areas of southern England, according to the Ministry of Defense. The admission by the Defense Secretary, George Robertson, shows that germ warfare experiments were more widespread than the MOD has previously disclosed. In a letter to Labour MP Ken Livingstone, Mr. Robertson expressed his, quote, regret, end quote, at the incomplete information provided by his predecessor, Michael Portillo. The new information will add to the growing concern in Dorset about the health impact of earlier tests disclosed in February. Local newspapers, councillors, and many residents have voiced concern that the tests already in the public domain are to blame for clusters. Now listen to this. Clusters of unexplained health problems, including several miscarriages in the coastal village of East Lulworth. Mr. Robertson said the airborne spraying formed part of the biological warfare trials program. Good God, what the hell are they doing? What in the hell are they doing? Now, this comes from the UK news. You know, so if you're not sure about what you're hearing from William Thomas, then go read something like this. And if they're doing that there, then you know damn well they're doing it here. We have really lost our minds. Back now to William Thomas. And William, did you hear that story I just read?
I did hear it, Art, yes.
This is, it's from the UK News, and here they are really admitting they're spraying stuff that makes people sick.
Art, 1 million British people were hit by those sprays from the aircraft and a ship also used off the coast. It's exactly mirroring similar tests off San Francisco, New York, and other cities, again using ships and aircraft. E. coli and Serratia marcescens were used in some of the British tests. They were used on Americans as well, and we have found both in the chemtrail substance.
God. You know, I think a lot of people think you're cracked, but you read something like this, and if they are openly admitting they're spraying things from the air that are making people sick in England, you said 1 million people.
1 million.
Then you know damn well they're doing it here too, and it really bolsters your argument. Anyway, look, we've got something that we want to do right now. We've got another guest with us. In fact, let me punch the button here. His name is Dave Peterson. Set it up for me, William. Who is Dave Peterson, and why are we bringing him on the air right now?
Dave Peterson is a gentleman from Aspen, Colorado, who has taken it on himself to come front and center on the chemtrail issue following very heavy spraying in Aspen. And he sponsored me into that city last summer during my speaking tour, and I did make a presentation there, Chemtrails Over America. And after that presentation, which was visited by at least one pilot, and now we're thinking maybe another, he came into possession of a fax sent to the editor of the Aspen Daily News, signed by someone calling himself a former NOAA pilot. That's NOAA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration.
Pilot.
Right. I'll quickly note that NOAA and NASA have in recent years been very interested in and have been running intensive experiments with normal contrails and how they might affect the weather and climate. I wrote one of the first stories on this.
Yep, I'm certainly aware of that.
Okay. This person purports to be a NOAA pilot, and Dave Peterson gave me a call when that fax came in.
All right. Do you want to have Dave read it, or are you going to?
I would like to read the facts, and then Dave followed up with an email interview with this pilot.
Ah, all right. Are you there, Dave?
Yes, I am.
Dave, welcome to the program. Okay,
yeah,
we're gonna go ahead and read this fax first, and then we're going to come to you since you had an interview with the person. So, William, go ahead. Read it.
Okay, this fax was sent in mid-August from a flight operations center in Colorado. Only pilots would have access to such a fax machine. It says, a pilot's side. Our mission was clear. Atmospheric studies, meteorological trend information gathering. We as government employees were not allowed to question the changes in equipment and personnel when it became obvious that our aircraft were now dispensing something. No flight plans were filed. Aircraft and crews were changed at remote air bases. No aircraft returned to originating air bases. The concentration of flights over certain population centers provides only a hint of what we might have been doing. Signed, a former NOAA pilot, using an email address that identified himself as a pilot.
So in other words, he thought he was doing early on atmospheric testing, that sort of thing, whatever NOAA does.
Yes, and he probably was.
And then that changed, and again, he is saying that he was, I take it, well, let's go to, you know, that was alarming enough. Let's go to David. David, welcome again.
Yes, thank you.
All right, well, that's a very, very disturbing thing to receive, and how did you follow up?
Okay, I was quite alarmed, as you guys are expressing. I emailed this gentleman once and then twice. On the second email, I did receive a response, and in that email, I also asked him 7 specific questions so that I could get a feel for if this guy was legit, and he did answer each question succinctly. And if you'd like, I can...
I would like, yes. What did you ask him? How did he respond?
Okay, so the first question, what were the changes in equipment and personnel? His answer was, from happy weathermen to guys that didn't talk or smile.
From happy weathermen to guys who didn't talk or smile.
Yes. The next question was, why was it obvious the aircraft were dispensing something, and what were they dispensing?
Right.
The answer was takeoff weight, landing weight, fuel burn in pounds. Third question, why no flight plans?
Well, wait a minute. What was he saying there? In other words, he was comparing the takeoff weight to the fuel and then whatever else, what other substance he claimed was being carried. Was that the, what he was saying there?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, pilots know that. So the third question was, why no flight plans? The answer there was airspace was cleared for us.
Airspace was cleared for us. In other words, they simply moved other aircraft away totally from the flight path, this unfiled flight path?
I believe so. I take it to mean that, and possibly Will could address that better than I.
Art, I think this clears up one of the biggest conundrums we've had with this story. Why hasn't air traffic control announced these airplanes, and why are they insisting there have been no flight plans, and how in the world have there been avoidance of collisions between these spray planes and commercial planes? And here is the answer very clearly. Airspace was cleared for us. This would indicate also complicity, at least at the top of the air traffic control chain.
Yeah, there would have to be, wouldn't there?
Absolutely.
This man, this pilot, is he willing to come forward, or what is his attitude now about, you know, further information, maybe even coming on the radio or going on TV or blowing the whistle to the networks or whatever in the hell you do now? How does he feel about that?
Well, I think he doesn't feel too good about that, because at the end of this fax, after he answered the rest of the questions, it was basically, he wrote, I need time to think about this. The truth could set me free, or I could turn up missing. Please give me time. I did give this gentleman time. I gave him several weeks, and at that point emailed him a third time for an update, and here's the response I received. If you think the government is spraying you, may I recommend a hat and umbrella? Go away. Leave me alone.
Huh. Well, there's a hell of a response. In other words, the guy... Is the guy... What's the guy saying here? Is he... It's almost... tongue-in-cheek, as though he's accusing you now of believing what he said he was doing, and ridiculously so, you know? That's kind of what that sounds like.
Yeah, that's what I gather, too. What I believe happened, he was accurate when he said he could turn up missing. Either someone put the fear of God in him, or he decided for his own safety not to take this any further.
What do you think?
Uh,
I mean, you were in conversation with the man, so you must have had a sense of how this was progressing over time. Do you think he decided that he was in danger?
That's my feeling on it. Yes.
God, David, is it your sense the man was real?
Yeah, very much so. I my gut level feeling was this was very right on, and there was no evidence for me to believe that this was a hoax, especially with the jargon he uses, etc. And the rest of the questions certainly say more about this if you want me to continue with those.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So, let's see, where were we? The fourth question was, where are these remote air bases? The answer was Groom Lake, Nevada, in parentheses, Area 51, and the new one in Utah.
Well, there's been a lot of speculation that Area 51 was moved to Utah.
Yes.
Now, that's not true. It certainly has not been moved. There may be a new facility in Utah. I have no idea. But I can assure you, Area 51 is every bit as active as it ever was. The article saying that that had changed was disinformation. So what else do you have?
Okay. So I asked for documentation. Do you have documentation that you are not allowed to question these changes? Simple answer was yes. But the most alarming question was number 7, which I wrote, where did the orders for this operation originate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I got for an answer was, and these words are all run together, no spacing, can't ensure accuracy. Now, each letter at the beginning of each word is capitalized.
CIA.
Correct.
Can't ensure accuracy, CIA. Jesus. You obviously feel this is real enough that you were ready to come forward on the air with it, David.
Yeah, absolutely. It's time to get this out.
Any suggestions on what we do?
Well, that's a loaded question.
It sure is.
Yeah, I mean, my intention here in Aspen, since we're getting sprayed so heavily, has always been to raise the awareness. And I believe I've been successful in that. The press has been very friendly to me, covering Will's visit here with some follow-up articles. And, in fact, they're going to be doing an article coming up in the next week or so about this letter. People are using the word chemtrail and spray day in their language, which tells me
spray day.
A critical mass has been reached.
I guess so. Now, your communication with this pilot has now ceased.
Yes, I've honored his request to go away and leave him alone.
Did you try and appeal to his, patriotic nature, I guess?
Absolutely. I thought it was his duty to come forward with this information, and I politely requested him to do so. I am contacting him one last time, although that may happen through the local paper.
I'll tell you, that's the appeal I'd try. I mean, I know that you take a risk when you come forward with this kind of information and that you might disappear. I mean, I'm realistic about these kinds of things, but, you know, the stakes here are so big that I don't, you know, I mean, how can the guy sleep at night?
Right, and how can he sleep knowing this information and not coming forward with it fully and disclosing everything?
He yeah.
apparently has documentation, but this may be a missed opportunity for us.
All right, David, I want to thank you for coming on the program and giving us this information. If you get any follow-up at all, you get to me right away, all right?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Art.
Thank you, David. We'll be right back.
In the year 25.
Can you think that far ahead?
If man is still alive.
A relevant question, obviously.
If woman can survive, they may find.
Deformed people. We are shortly going to return to the subject of the West Nile virus and a fax I've received and a witness we've got on the phone. But right now, back to William Thomas, and I think we want to finish up on the spraying angle and the what we just heard about that pilot, or from that pilot. So, William, what else do you want to get out?
I want to pick up on where we left off, Art, with the mention of the Alphabet Soup Agency, the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they're brought into just about everything we can't understand. But this rang some real alarm bells just 2 days ago when I received a story called Who's Who in the C-130 Scandal, written and very well researched by John Titus of the Portland Free Press.
Mm-hmm.
The story appeared last March and April and just came to my attention. The story talks about C-130s, and I'll note here that these four-engine Hercules transport planes have been seen throughout the United States spraying substances from very low altitudes, treetop and rooftop altitudes, also in Ontario. When I was speaking in Colorado last summer, I took a two-day holiday to Pagosa Springs, a little resort town known for its hot springs up in the Rocky Mountains. I had just checked into the motel, and I was walking across the street when I stopped dead in my tracks, open mouth, and watched a camouflaged C-130, this is a very big airplane,
oh yes,
come down over the town at 500 feet or lower. This is illegal. You must maintain 1,000 feet separation over habitation. He glided in silently 500 feet as I watched this airplane about two blocks away swoop over the town, and as he pulled up, I saw two streams come from the wingtips of the aircraft, and he applied power and turned away. Now, when you apply power to throttled back turbines, you can get a greasy kerosene trail from all four engines. This was not the case. The engines were clean, and the trails were coming off the wingtips. I did a radio show, and a caller, very agitated, phoned in and said a formation of these C-130s had gone down the main street in Colorado Springs spraying. He and others had gone after the Air Force and had gotten nothing except routine exercise from the Air Force. Brings us back to the story on C-130s and how they've been diverted from the Forest Service for work by the CIA. Remember, these are spray aircraft equipped to spray from tanks.
Sure.
Over forest fires. We are talking, John Titus says, of 42, perhaps 42 former military planes, C-130s from the Air Force and P-3 Orions, that's a four-engine Electra-type aircraft, diverted from the military and the C-130s from the firefighting capabilities of the Forest Service. And this story goes on to talk about how a former Air Force person, Roy Reagan, used a network of contacts to sell these aircraft on the open market, including aircraft sold to CIA operatives. A former director of the Forest Service Aviation Program, Fred Fuchs, if I have that right, was also involved in this. We go down and we see that Eugene Hossenfuss was the man who was shot down and with the Washington phone number, White House phone numbers in his pocket, naming the CIA agents he worked for.
Yeah, I remember.
Spilled the beans on the CIA selling drugs to run arms to the Contras. Okay. The article concludes by saying the C-130 scandal is but the tip of an iceberg, with dozens of companies and individuals operating beyond any kind of Forest Service or congressional oversight. Isn't it curious that spray planes have been diverted to the CIA for operations as yet undisclosed, to the point where extreme fires in Los Padres, Angeles, Trinity National Forest, and other California forests this summer basically went unfought, or at least without the services of these fire suppression airplanes.
Because they were busy doing CIA stuff.
They were doing CIA stuff, and it's my contention tonight that we are looking at a spray program using leased aircraft, at least for the low-level sprays by the C-130s identified in Ontario and throughout the United States. And now it's my contention, very possibly, the KC-135s we've been seeing may not be military at all, but could be leased or bought aircraft. Remember, the KC-135 is a civilian 707, a very, very old airplane, one of the first commercial jets, in fact. They are a dime a dozen, expensive to operate, but cheap to buy. And now I'm beginning to wonder if we have some answers here tonight on where these aircraft have originated, what agency is behind them, and even how this massive operation could be, underlying could be, financed, and that is through drug money.
Oh, it gets worse and worse. Are you worried about your safety?
No, not in the least. I have had zero negative feedback of any kind, official or otherwise, for these stories. Again, I am just quoted from a newspaper article written last March. All of my information comes from news sources except for the pilot, and that's about to be published by the Aspen Daily News. So as a working journalist, I'm simply doing my job, and I don't fear for my safety reporting this kind of information.
My advice is take care.
Well,
I really mean that.
I hear you, Art, and I can only answer by saying for myself and anyone else interested in related stories, safety lies in publication and in broadcasting this material.
Yeah, and you have published, you have a book, which I want to make everybody aware of. What is your book? Actually, you've got two, but
I have two that are very germane to our discussion tonight. Scorched Earth talks about the bio-war experiments over America. Bringing the War Home talks about Gulf War illness, a very secret American program, a White House program, makes that, to supply Saddam Hussein with germ weapons. It talks about the mycoplasma, which is now rampant in the population, and most importantly, gives a chapter on treatment, not only of the mycoplasma, but in these immune-defeating biowarfare agents. And Bringing the War Home is available from my publisher through a toll-free number. I urge people to pick it up and become aware.
All right. I know we've got a link. Amazon.com, I'm sure, has got them also.
Yes.
And so you can go that way, or you can call a toll-free number, which is
888-690-1277.
1277.
It's $22.95 postpaid to your door. Very important information.
All right. We'll give that out again. In the meantime, do you have an email address or a way people can contact you?
I would prefer that people went to my website, and from there they can reach me by email.
That's fine. I'm sure we've got a link to your website.
Yeah, you do.
Right. So you can go to my website, go down to William's name, and go to his website, and there's a way to email you from there?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Yeah, that will work.
All right. Just go down to the name William Thomas under the guest area. Although there are a lot of people who will not immediately be able to do that, I would assume the majority will.
Okay, well, I can take a deep breath, Art, and stand back, but I could give my email address here.
No, Art, go ahead.
Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet, one word, islandnet.com. Please, if you're from the media, do email me.
All right, Wilco, and you're particularly interested in media contacts, obviously. Wilco at islandnet, islandnet is one word, .com. That's easy, W-I-L-C-O, Wilco at islandnet.com.
That's it.
All right, I have, again, I'm not going to read the whole thing, a fax from Dr. Robert Boghossian, who's been on the program before, and he says, in part, Dear Art, it's that time of year again when the bacteria and viruses are going crazy. The West Nile virus in New York, which I think got loose from the Plum Island Research Facility in the ocean off Long Island, is a good example. And that hit me right between the eyes, because you contend the same thing, don't you?
Absolutely. There's no other explanation that comes close to the Plum Island connection. And I'm sure, of course, it's just a coincidence that Dr. Tracy McNamara, the animal pathologist at the Bronx Zoo, who was the first to identify that this was not St. Louis encephalitis, just a coincidence, Art, that she was trained at Plum Island Laboratory.
Oh, of course. We've got a gal we're going to bring on right now named Patty Doyle. Who is Patty, and why are we bringing her on?
Patty Doyle is a retired individual who became quite incensed over the outbreak and cover-up, or what she felt might be a cover-up, and began researching this and badgering officials at Plum Island and elsewhere, and started to email me with incredible documentation. And I'll underscore that word. Her information has been fully documented and attributed. She has been a great help to me in unraveling this story, and her suspicion was exactly like my own. This was not a natural occurrence, and there was something behind this outbreak.
All right, let's bring her on. Patty Doyle, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Art, and hi, Will.
Patty, where are you, Patty?
I'm in Stormville, New York.
Stormville, New York. And how in the world did you get all involved in this story?
Well, Art, it happened in June, before the outbreak. I had a chance meeting of an acquaintance, and he had worked at Plum Island. He was an independent contractor. And we were just discussing the facility, and he was telling me a little bit about it. And he was concerned about safety issues. In fact, so concerned that he didn't stay there very long. He lasted 2 weeks and walked off the job. And then in August of this year, I heard there was a malaria outbreak
Long Island. Did he tell you specifically what scared him enough to leave?
Yes, he did. He said, mentioned the pathogens that they had. It just was very, he was a young man, his wife was expecting, and he was definitely afraid of bringing something home. He did mention anthrax. He saw a movie to get the position at Plum Island. They didn't do a background check. For the most part, who he was didn't matter. They offered him a good scale of pay, and they showed him a movie, what to do should an accident take place.
Mm-hmm.
And he just didn't feel the place was all that safe.
Now, William mentioned earlier on the show that they are bio-level containment 5.
That's right.
I didn't even know there was such a thing.
We found there is a United Nations lab in Italy, which is interesting to note, because not far from that place in 98, there was an outbreak of West Nile, almost the same strain, which was suspicious. And according to protocol, what usually happens with Plum Island is pathogens from foreign countries are sent to Plum Island. So if there was an outbreak, samples of the pathogen would have gone to Plum Island.
Well, I know that you're not an expert, Patty, but I've seen in all the movies about bio-level containment 4 cautions, you know, with the suits they wear and all the rest of that sort of thing. What does anybody know what happens when you go to containment level 5, whatever in God's name that would be?
I think Will has it down pretty well.
Will?
Yeah, we've got it down. The U.S. Department of Agriculture tells us that a biosafety level 5, I call it biohazard level 5,
right,
is for labs that by law are not allowed on the U.S. mainland. Because if the diseases there get loose, well, you can imagine the rest. This Plum Island lab was set up in 54, specifically offshore, just 2 miles offshore, with the idea of the prevailing winds blowing out to sea, blowing to the east, away from the mainland. That is how they achieve their bio-level 5 status.
Well, that sounds great, but what about prevailing birds?
Prevailing birds fly upwind to the mainland, and storms, by the way, which could cause a power failure, and perhaps if the generators fail, negate the negative pressure that keeps these pathogens indoors. Those storms blow onshore.
Onshore.
Oh, yes. They come in off the Atlantic, and they howl onto the mainland coast. 2 miles away.
God. So in other words, a bird or a storm or any number of other things could make the idea of having these incredibly dangerous things a couple of miles offshore a joke.
These dangerous things are foot and mouth disease, which we haven't seen in the United States, and the Rinderpest virus that they've been working on a vaccine successfully out of Plum Island, and by the way, injecting human test subjects because some of these animal diseases are transferable to humans. This is a lab that has been cited, as Patty will possibly go into some detail, for numerous safety violations and accidents. And a Dr. Mike Kiley discussing biocontainment and explaining levels 1 through 5 at a public function recently emphasized the necessity for upgrading those facilities to maintain the required biosecurity.
So he
discussed, in fact, they were failing safety inspections.
He discussed this publicly?
Oh, yeah.
And he outlined the fact there's a level 5?
Oh, he and the director, Mr. Torres, in another meeting, openly said, oh yes, this is a level 5 facility. Patty, however, got a different response when she called Plum Island.
What'd you get, Patty?
Well, the representative said she never heard of level 5 and she had to get back to me. She says, we'll call you back.
Oh.
And she got in touch with Dr. Kiley. And when she called back, she said, oh, he was laughing. There's no level 5. We're a level 3 facility. So then I told her about what I had heard at the meeting, and she said, well, you must have misunderstood, and they tried to just put it down.
This meeting is the United States Animal Health Association Government Relations Committee meeting in Washington, D.C., February 22 to 27th, 1998. There you go, for the record.
Anybody have an audio tape or anything else of it?
I didn't.
No, we have documentation from that meeting on a government website.
You mean they...
I got it from their own website.
From their website?
Yes, the government.
Is it still there now, Patty? Or
yes, it is.
It is?
Yes.
And now, Art, they want to officially, as of last September, officially upgrade to bio-level 4. They're asking for funding to upgrade to bio-level 4.
Well,
perhaps we could clear something up here. The lab is operating actually as a level 3 facility, that is, with negative air pressure and people taking a lot of showers. Level 5 is because they are located just offshore with some heavy-duty pathogens. Level 4... Level 4 would give us the spacesuits and extra containment, but in fact, it is a level 5 lab.
All right, hold it right there. We'll be right back. Boy, that's our government. They've blown it sky high, haven't they? I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Stay right where you are.
Go, 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 ride, I will ride the wind.
have online William Thomas, an investigator, and Patty Doyle. And we're just going to get back to them. Just a few quick things that have come in. Art from Oregon. We've had spraying here in southern Oregon. There's a pattern of heavy spraying for about 3 days, then nothing for 2 weeks. Or this. Hi, Art. I'm in shock thinking about Plum Island. It's very close to New London, Connecticut. I guess that's where he is. It's bad enough that Gary Noor said that New London was a failure city for Y2K. Now, a one-of-a-kind number five lab just offshore. Some ocean storms drive in from the south right toward the New London area. We've got a lot of friends and relatives in that area. Are they in harm's way? What the hell is next? This is scary. Fill in the blank, Art. Then there's this. Art, please verify my integrity with Will. We've been communicating on the chemtrails for 10 months. I'm the one who had the sample with the parasites Joyce Riley talked about. We got rid of the samples 3 days before I heard Joyce on your show. You called me, but I wasn't home. The last sample we took, the ball was dropped, even though they found an unidentified bacteria because the doctor receiving the sample would not pay for further testing as he wanted only the parasites. Please ask Will if he thinks it's a good idea to ask listeners to take samples of any goo they find, place it in a petri dish with a growing culture, see if we can get these horrific parasites again. And by the way, he's correct about the anxiety, depression, and dumbing down of the mind. I live in Fair Oaks, and it's a major spraying area. Also, we've seen white unmarked planes with black underbodies, black planes, and silver planes. My friend and I have a new group of samples, and we'll begin growing them tomorrow. We'll let you know. Sincerely, Jan. And then finally, this is an interesting thing to consider. It's from a police officer, and I won't give his name for his own protection, but he says, Art, there's a problem with the thinking that the group that would be spraying the chemicals would be trying to make people depressed and docile. I am a police officer, and you know, I work with a deputy who's in the department, so we're out in the weather all the time. We would be some of the very first people affected. We would also be the persons to keep the peace if things go bad on 1-1 of 2000. Just thought I'd pass this along. Interesting, huh, Will?
Very interesting. He mentioned being out in the weather, and we associate most of the spraying with clear skies, not with weather. I take it to mean heavy rain and wind.
Yeah.
So perhaps that explains the lack of spray that he might be noticing. A good point nonetheless.
Well, no, his point was that as a police officer, he's not saying he's not seeing this. He's saying if the effect was depression and causing people to be docile, emergency workers, fire, police, those kind of people, they're out in it all the time, and they would be the people you would be depending on to keep some kind of peace.
I see. Good point. Yes, thank you.
Okay, now Patty Doyle, by the way, I've got another one here, something called Free American News Magazine, and the headline is simply, Since When Do C-130s Leave Contrails? That's what it says. Since when do C-130s leave contrails? And there is a photograph.
At treetop level, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. All right, well, again back to Plum Island. And Patty, why don't you, Will, lead Patty through wherever you would like her to go?
Patty, could you talk about some of the safety violations and citations this lab has come under fire for in the recent years?
Okay, well, we'll do recent years.
Yeah.
1993, they were cited for leaving 10 infected dead lab birds outside of the exotic animal lab in the corridor, in the open air. It's interesting to note, because during my interview with the Plum Island representative, they said they do not have any lab birds, they don't work on birds, there's no bird lab. And yet here we have 10 dead lab birds. Okay, in 1994, they were cited for dumping waste into the Sound. They were also cited for storing hazardous chemicals. In 1998, Dennis Bacco sued the federal government for Plum Island for illegal dumping into the Sound. And
where is this information coming from, Patty?
EPA and from news articles, Newsday.
Okay. All right.
It's all documented. I can send you some stuff if you want to put it on the website.
Okay.
And we also have this spring, which is very interesting to note. We have Plum Island cited as a significant violator of the Clean Air Act and a high priority violator of the RCRA, Resource Conservation Recovery Act. And then we also have a installation job, a fiber optic cable that they installed under the sea between Orient Point and Plum Island. And during installation, I finally got the rep to admit that they did have the power out. And the cable that they installed was to run backup power also. So to install, to finalize installation, they did have to shut the power to Plum Island.
So they were totally freaked about the possibility of losing power at Plum Island, obviously.
Yes.
Well, if they're a level 3 facility, they wouldn't need that, would they?
Well, yes, they need power to ensure that their blowers can continue to maintain negative air pressure so that any pathogens would stay inside the lab. And without power, you can't maintain negative air pressure.
Right. All right. Now, Patty, you said there was a website, a government website, that admits openly there is this level 5 containment facility, which nobody has ever heard of. Now, can you get that URL to my webmaster?
Yes, I can. I can. It was the website for the United States Animal Health Association, and it is a government website, and I most certainly will as soon as the show is over.
All right, get it to a webmaster. Simply send it to webmaster@artbell.com.
Okay.
webmaster@artbell.com. All right, please continue, Will. Anything else Patty should be talking about?
Two things. First, it's incredible the lab is denying work on birds. Birds are one of the most common vectors of animal diseases. If you're studying exotic animal diseases, you must be experimenting and studying birds. You must, by definition. Patty might mention a little problem, not so little actually, in Long Island Sound as we speak, with the lobsters and a certain finfish that, again, it seems to be pointing fingers to an as yet unidentified bacteria in waters adjacent to Plum Island. Patty?
Yes, that's right. I've been corresponding with some fishermen out in the Sound. In fact, I have one interview to do today by telephone to a Aaron Whitman. He's a lobster man. And the lobsters are dead and dying.
By the millions.
You knew about that.
I do. Over a million is what I've heard.
Yes. And also, since July, there are certain fish that are non-existent in the Sound, in the north shore of Long Island.
You mean fish that have been indigenous to the area that are now non?
That's right. I think bluefish were mentioned. Adult bunkers, whatever bunkers are, they were non-existent since July. And also worm population is down.
Now that's really worrisome. I mean, animals that are indigenous to an area suddenly disappearing altogether, very worrisome.
Well, in 1970, Plum Island had an accident. It was rushed up. They had an accident, and they evacuated people from the island, and then they proceeded to toxic spray the entire island.
Do you know what kind of accident?
Just a microbe escape.
Just?
Yeah, that's all. It was nothing big, they said. It was after they finally admitted it. And they toxic sprayed the island. So what I'm tracing is trying to find out if similar fishing conditions existed back in the 70s as what we're witnessing now.
Hold on here. Hold on here. Red flag. We have another red flag here. We have one resident in Queens dying of a mysterious outbreak in September. Almost immediately on September 2nd, for the first time in New York City's history, massive spraying of a potent pesticide. This is an organophosphate pesticide similar to sarin and other nerve agents, began in that city. And it appears to me a similar panic reaction set in, and I can easily visualize, and I can come up with no other explanation. But picture a frantic phone call from Plum Island or from a federal health authority to the mayor of New York City saying, we have an outbreak, we have an escaped pathogen. What else would account for such massive spraying 1 month? 1 month before the proper federal permits were obtained. This was an illegal spraying, and it appears to me a panic reaction. Similar to the reaction Patty mentioned of evacuating and spraying the island.
So in other words, you're really saying the whole thing is a giant cover-up, and you think this has come from Plum Island and not out of thin air, as they seem to more or less suggest.
Not out of thin air, not out of old tires. This was a genetically altered virus, according to CDC, whether natural or bioengineered.
Right.
We will know by the end of the month, according to the scientists doing the DNA testing. Hopefully they'll release that information. I believe that this was an outbreak from crows or other birds flying from Plum Island to the mainland, and that this spraying took place as a panic reaction. Remember, we had only one death, and the New York Times was saying in an editorial that based on experience elsewhere, people exposed in that area of the outbreak could expect to become sick, and they would have a 1 in 300,000 chance of becoming sick with something that would give them a 48-hour flu-like symptom unless they were elderly or had compromised immune systems. And the CDC estimated a maximum death toll of 10 people. And we have spraying for, according to the mayor, every 5 days for at least 5 weeks, and it will resume in the springtime with a malathion spraying that has a four-page warning label saying, keep this away from people.
All right.
They even went door-to-door collecting blood samples.
What?
CDC went door-to-door collecting blood samples.
All right.
When this first broke out, and they won't give the people the results.
All right, both of you, hold on. We'll be right back. Okay, well, we'll shortly begin to take phone calls for William. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I have a feeling one of the chain links is broken. What do you think? Thomas, and I want to get to phone calls shortly, William, but I also want to finish up with Patty. Anything else we should know? The record so far of Plum Island, as she has related it, sounds pathetic. Totally pathetic.
Pathetic or frightening, we might use that term, for a level 5 lab so close to major population centers. Art, I'd like to break in here, if I could, with a rather urgent update on the chemtrails story just came in.
Oh?
Yes, this really seems to confirm my hypothesis of leased aircraft But now we're operating at higher altitudes with jets. Dave Peterson has informed me that people using binoculars in Aspen have identified a shamrock logo on the tails of some of the spray aircraft.
Shamrock.
This shamrock apparently is from an air freight company's logo. These aircraft have also been seen, he says, further west. We are now trying to track that logo and identify the air freight company involved with these aircraft, again seen spraying from lower altitudes than normal over Aspen today and in previous recent days.
Somebody out there will know what that logo means and get it to us.
Great.
I guarantee you. Okay, let us finish up with Patty. I know we're going to have to get some phone calls in here. Mm-hmm. There is one other question, though, that I have. Just one more, William. It didn't get answered. It was asked earlier in a fax. And that is, if people out there encounter this goo or whatever in the hell it is, what do you say to them about, you know, attempting to collect it? Is that potentially dangerous?
It is. People ought to wear some kind of rudimentary mask and certainly plastic or latex gloves. Those precautions, however, ought to be adequate. Put it in a Ziploc bag if you don't have a Petri dish, and email me, and we might be able to find a way to get it tested. The tests are expensive. I have a source now that may be able to do that for us. It is vital, though, that people videotape or take still pictures of the goo in the situation they find it.
All right.
And they collect it very carefully to avoid contamination. And they collect it off glass, such as a windshield of a car, a metal roof, or aluminum siding, not from the ground or any surface that could be contaminated with dirt. That's messed up many of the samples so far.
All right. Patty, anything else you want to get to us?
Well, basically, I did want to say that I was born and raised in the Bronx and in Yonkers.
I can hear it in your voice.
I know you can. I'm just a private citizen that said, now is enough. No more. I lost the whole side of my family in Valley Stream, Long Island. My relatives died prematurely, most from breast cancer. And it just got to the point when I heard the story from the acquaintance, and I also heard from another acquaintance that they also conduct submarine activity at the island. They have training sessions, and when they say they're not government affiliated, I just get very angry. And I recently got a computer, and I got angry enough that I started asking questions. But what was interesting to note that when I approached the mainstream media, nobody was taking.
No takers, huh?
No takers whatsoever. I wrote to Congress that to Representative Forbes. I'm still waiting to hear from him.
Well, I'll tell you this, it sure is beginning to hit the non-mainstream media. I'm seeing a lot of articles.
Well, the place is a disaster. They do government contracts work, because there are certain doctors there, I don't want to name the names, but they work on Dominion, which is Canada, for Canada, and they work for Federal. They are contracted under those terms, Dominion and Federal. And the submarine activity indicates there would be a Navy connection. And also, if you note, it's Plum Island is 13 miles from Groton, Connecticut,
right,
which is the submarine base.
Patty, are you at all concerned for your safety?
I was 2 days ago. There was a helicopter that came over the house, and I thought that he would land on my roof. Now, my daughter got a look at it. I was so scared. I was taking a nap in the afternoon, and I put my feet on the floor, and I couldn't move. I was that scared. But, no, I don't think it. Too much is out now. And besides, all they think of me is a retiree. Too much time on my hands, and I think they, for the most part, they discount it. If it hits the mainstream media, well, then we'll see.
All right, Patty, you keep asking questions then, and when you get answers, you call me.
Okay.
All right?
Yes.
Thank you for coming on tonight, Patty.
And thank you, Art, and thank you so much, Wilford. I know he's been so busy with chemtrails, and I appreciate him taking the time to help me out in this. Thank you very much, Art.
Okay, you bet. Good night. All right, Will. We're going to try, we should try to take some calls from the audience and see what's on their mind. This is going to really blow a lot of people away, and it's going to make them very uncomfortable. You realize how this scares people.
I'm very concerned as a journalist, and every time I go on air, Art, I say a little prayer that I speak not to frighten people, but to inform and alarm them, yes, to the point of taking action. And I want to stress this very strongly tonight. Art, we are just about out of time. Your show talks constantly about the earth changes that are not coming but are here now.
That's right.
Y2K is upon us. We are just about out of time, as someone said to me on the phone the other night. We better start taking this seriously. Get together in our families, as communities, raise hell with our elected officials, particularly at the local level. Organize citizens' protest. I remind people that November 20th, there will be an international protest on chemtrails centering a New York City Times Square at the New York Times, 12 noon. Go to your local media, particularly your television station. Organize chemtrail protests wherever you are located, and get together now and insist on media coverage and government accountability. Time is running out.
All right. Again, I would like to say, anybody in the media, particularly in the media, obviously we want to get the word out. Part of, you know, we never know whether what we're saying is completely true or some of it is not completely true. But the only way to get to it is to continue to investigate and get the mainstream media involved. So if you're in the media and would like information from Will, you can email him at Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet.com. That's Wilco at islandnet.com. Let's try a few calls here. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hello.
Hello, where are you?
Somewhere in the southern U.S.
Somewhere in the southern U.S., all right.
Yes. Is this Art?
Yes, it is.
Yes, hi. Glad I got through. Well, what I have to say is kind of in line with what your guest has had to say about chemtrails, and it also carries on into something even, it's going to blow your mind. I received a email from a gentleman who was a friend of my father's, and this man had worked closely with the CDC. He had been fired from his job for sending my father a letter informing him way back when, before public disclosure about AIDS had come through, warning him about that. So I know that this man's information was it's something that you could take.
So in other words, some man emailed your father and told him about AIDS before it ever became public.
This was before email.
Oh, okay.
He wrote him a letter.
I got you. All right. So you trust the man as a source. What's he saying now?
He emailed me with an attachment stating in it, and I'll try and put it in a nutshell because I don't know how much time I have to talk about this, that what's to come is on or about November the 14th, you're going to see a major pullout in the stock market. And the reason behind that is, I'll get to that. On or about the turn of the century, of course, the new year, he alluded to in his letter, and I'm not going to use any exact quotes because he writes in a quite a unique fashion, and somebody might recognize that.
Yes.
That several major U.S. cities will be destroyed. And he said that the government is going to allude to a possible extraterrestrial source of this occurrence. And he said that the reason will be that in order to jump into a type of martial law,
you've got to have an emergency, right?
You've got to have an emergency,
and
correct.
And so you're saying they're going to cook it up and it's coming soon?
Correct. And that in order for this to happen, we have to have the old common enemy. He said that the U.S. troops right now, there aren't enough in action to support such action in the United States as it exists.
Well, I'm beginning to wonder if the enemy is not us. I appreciate your call. It doesn't precisely relate to what we are discussing right now, but I appreciate your call. And we'll see. All kinds of dire forecasts and occurrences for the millennium. So, any questions for William Thomas? Wildcard line, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Hi.
Good morning, Art. This is Paul in Philadelphia. Mr. Thomas.
Yeah,
your reports are great. I really appreciate it. Listen, I was wondering, here in Philadelphia, in the western suburbs, occasionally we see a lot of chemtrails, and they're clearly identifiable. And on days when, many times when we don't see chemtrails, I just see a lot of planes fly over here, and they come by. And I wanted to ask you if other people have seen these various types of aircraft that have variously colored blinking lights that seem to be specifically blinking particular ways, and if there's any electromagnetic effect involved with the chemtrail, because that's the way it seems to me. And
all right, sir. Well, that, to follow up on that, there has been some speculation that things emitted from airplanes, chemicals or whatever, might be used in conjunction with something like HAARP to try and affect the weather. William?
Yes, and not even HAARP. We have the Gwen ground system. We have a lot of electromagnetic smog or pollution. In answer to the caller, yes, I have two reports of very odd, almost hypnotic light displays at night or twilight. I have reports of aircraft flying low over houses and disturbing television reception over an area.
They do that, yes.
And in Lenny Horowitz's latest book, he talks about prions. He talks about how these crystalline protein structures resonate to very subtle frequencies. And I'm beginning to wonder if chemicals sprayed on us or otherwise ingested could be activated by electromagnetic frequencies. I'm not the first to think of this, but I now have some documentation to back up that kind of speculation. And if so, this answers another question for me, namely if various fungi are being sprayed at higher altitudes, how can they survive the UV? And it now appears that the ultraviolet is actually an activator of these substances.
That doesn't surprise me one bit. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Good morning.
Morning to you.
You guys are trying to scare us to death out here.
Well, scaring me to death. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Michigan.
Michigan, all right.
Hey, I'm the guy that sent you the chemtrail photo art with Jupiter Menace. Did you happen to get that yet?
Yes, I did.
Anything worthwhile?
Oh, yes. Hang in there. It's in the pile.
Yeah, it's in the pile. It's the one that says open before Michigan trip.
I know. I've got it.
Anyway, you answered part of my question with the Project HAARP thing, but William, is there anything we can do to protect ourselves against this? Is there anything that we as the public can, like, wear, eat, whatever, to protect ourselves?
Absolutely. And let's have some good news now.
Okay, here's good.
Here's the good news. Whatever is being sprayed on us, and we do have a handle on some of these substances, and we've been talking about an encephalitis out on the East Coast, these are not lethal substances to almost all of us with a normally functioning immune system, except for the very elderly. And I'm beginning to suspect that perhaps they are being targeted by governments or even higher placed people concerned about changing demographics and an aging population. That aside, the answer to your question is, Yes. Ken Alibek, who you'll probably recognize as the former head of the Soviet biowarfare program, defected to the United States in 92, said in an interview recently that vaccines against biowarfare agents are ineffective and
That's
impossible
right.
to
right.
either concoct or to inoculate a population.
That's
he
right.
says, to protect yourself against bioweapons, you must boost your immune system.
That's right. He also said, I believe, that the U.S. is so far behind the Russians in the work being done. In other words, they are working on some sort of inoculation versus what they have to disperse if they want to.
Yes.
That it's, just forget it. It's out of reach.
Again, my book, Bringing the War Home, has a chapter, an entire chapter on remedies and protection. Basically, it's eating organic food that has not been dusted with germ warfare-derived pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
It's about taking very high-quality supplements, vitamins, minerals, and herbs on a daily basis. It's about loving the heck out of each other, getting in touch, keeping vaccines out of your veins and out of the bloodstreams of your children, and doing everything we can to boost our natural immune systems. And that is our very best protection, and effective in almost every case so far.
In other words, the old, what is it, the strongest shall survive, or whatever it is, that saying is going to be absolutely true, right?
It is absolutely true, and yet this isn't a survival of the fittest jungle scenario. It's a rebuilding immune systems that have been trashed by industrial pollutants, and particularly,
but
the big one, stress.
In the end, though, William,
yes,
survival of the fittest is what is going to be true, if what you're saying is accurate.
Yes, I'm simply noting that many of us can be among the fittest if we take those precautions and have that awareness.
All right, are you?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, are you good for the last hour?
Let's do it.
Okay, good. Stay right where you are then. William Thomas is my guest. Rhythm of the Falling Chemtrails. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and we will be right back. Mr. Bell, it says, I'm sending this fax because, well, one, where else would I go with this account where it would stand chance in hell of being considered valid? Two, you keep tabs on things that others dare not broach. Yeah, it's true. I believe there is something, he says, acutely wrong with the air in Houston, Texas. Something in addition to ozone, pollen, and mold. What worries me about this agent, in quotes, is that beyond causing extreme allergy symptoms, it is capable of modifying behavior. I am certain it alters mine, and I would not be surprised to learn it's doing the same to others as well. Having lived here for over three decades, I've become familiar with our peak allergy seasons. My symptoms have always been standard. Rarely have they become terribly annoying. This year, however, they have moved into a new dimension. even on days when the pollen mold counts have been mid to low, I've had intense attacks that send me into deep, protracted sneezing fits accompanied by swollen, irritated, itchy eyes and unstoppable drainage. And you know, it's interesting that he should write this because both my wife and myself have had sneezing fits. I mean, that's all I can call them. Waking up, and I've never had that in my life before, waking up in the middle of the night, and I never even thought to mention it until this fact, waking up in the middle of the night and just one sneeze after another, after another, after another, after another, and finally, of course, you're dripping and you go in and you blow your nose until you think you're going to blow your brains out, and eventually it lets up and you can go back to sleep. But I wonder if any of the rest of you have experienced what this man and now I have just told you about. And this applies to my wife and myself. I wonder how common it is. And I wonder who's going to stop the rain, too. Well, all right, we're going to lay heavily into the telephones this hour. My guest is William Thomas, and we've laid quite a case out for you throughout the night. Again, we have no way of knowing if everything you've heard is accurate. Somebody mentioned airplanes with shamrocks on them. Well, there is a company that does have airplanes with shamrocks on them called Shamrock Aircraft Sales, Inc. And as a matter of fact, it says here, I've got welcome to the homepage of Shamrock Aircraft Sales, Inc. The internet provides us a great way to instantly show you pictures of our airplanes and provide specs without the wait for mail or overnight services. Just select the airplanes you want to view, print the specs and pictures, and call our toll-free number if you'd like to discuss the airplanes in more detail. Now, we have no way of knowing if these aircraft are doing anything untold, nor, of course, whether the manufacturer of these aircraft, with the sign of the Shamrock, in any way would know if any of the aircraft they have sold is doing that kind of work. So I want to be very careful about that and not in any way say anything bad about the Shamrock Aircraft Sales people. But there is indeed, to confirm for you, such a company. And so there you have it. William, you were wondering about that. There is Shamrock Aircraft Sales, and they've got the little logo here of the Shamrock.
Thank you, Art, and I would join you in not pointing fingers at that company, but looking a bit closer at their website and seeing if they're offering 707s for sale, big aircraft. We're not interested in smaller airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Well, they said they've got pictures of the aircraft they sell, so I presume you could
go to their website and check it out.
Thank
you.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. My name is Diane, and I'm calling from Long Island, New York.
Okay, Diane, you're going to have to screech at us a little bit, but go ahead.
Okay. I was born and raised in Orient Point, Long Island, which is the very tippy end of the North Fork,
as
you said, it's 2 miles away from Plum Island.
Mm-hmm.
And my father worked on Plum Island when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did. He worked in the laundry, and he came home with some stories. There's restricted areas over there where nobody was allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And if the workers wandered into them, they were escorted out by the security system over there, which was very, that was strange. I was not allowed, well, the whole families were not allowed to go to things like zoos and circuses because we were told that we were in danger of spreading diseases to the other animals.
Really?
Yeah, this was, I never went to a zoo until I was in my 30s. My husband and I went to the Bronx Zoo, and then I went to the circus later. It was like this whole, none of the families could do things like that.
Have you ever heard of this, William?
I certainly have, and I am listening with rapt attention and again reminding myself that some of these animal diseases are transferable to humans.
Yes. Now, when I first heard about the encephalitis outbreak, I think the first people who became ill were in New York City, which is about 35, 40 miles away from where I'm living now. When it began to spread further and then they were spraying, the first thought that came into my mind was this was something that escaped from Plum Island.
Mm.
And I began telling people about it, and of course their reactions were, huh? But knowing the things that I know, my dad, back in the 70s, you were talking about the outbreak. A little while before, you were talking about the outbreak.
Yes.
I remember that. My father said that everybody who worked there, they sent the workers home, and they all had to wear paper clothes when they left the island, and the animals that they had over there were all destroyed. They were incinerated.
I've never heard any of this.
Yeah, this is also, like I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, there were restricted areas on the island. My father told me one time the story. I wish that he was still alive. He died a couple of years ago, but I'm just recounting things that I heard that he passed on to me. There was a worker who was fairly new, and whether he did it out of curiosity or did it by mistake, he wandered into a restricted area and he saw a cow with two heads. I mean, they were doing many different things over there. There's been stories in Newsday, too, which is the local paper. It's a local daily paper on Long Island. Several years ago, they were doing an expose on Plum Island. And I don't know what happened after that. That died out. Also, with the encephalitis, I don't know if you're aware that there are horses that have died in further out east in Riverhead, Matatuck, and Cutchogue.
I am aware of it, and I'm looking for documentation of that, those incidents.
Yes, that was, I read about that in this weekly paper that I get in the mail. It's called the Suffolk Times.
Do you have any of those clippings or articles left, ma'am?
No, I don't. No, unfortunately, I threw them away, but you could probably look them up on microfilm.
All right. Well, listen, I thank you for what you have told us, and I thank you for your call, and you're scaring me. You have a good night. Usually I scare people. She scared me. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, this is Joy from Santa Cruz.
Hi there.
William Thomas, thank you so much for doing this show, and thank you, Art, for bringing him on.
Sure.
This is really, I think, very important. This is actually the scariest show I've ever heard you do.
Yeah,
me too.
Last winter, I saw a whole bunch of chemtrails after you first started doing this, doing all of this coverage. And we had like about seven or eight go over our skies. And I live in Santa Cruz in the mountains, and you just don't see that. I mean, we live in a flight line. There's nothing like this. And it covered the skies entirely after a while. And the next day, both my husband and I came down with 104 fevers. We got really sick. I mean, really, really sick. And right after that, when we got that sick, we were so sick we couldn't even get to the doctors. I called my doctor, you know, on the after hours number, and I said, these are our symptoms. And he prescribed for us something which was totally strange. And
do you know what
that
was?
Without even seeing us.
What?
It was called Sinitril, and it's a drug that's used for Parkinson's disease.
What?
Yeah. It was really strange.
And he did this without seeing you?
Yeah.
Did it work?
Yeah. Yes, it did. It gave us a night of hallucinations, actually, but the next morning our fevers had gone down dramatically. And this was, it's being evidently used for influenza A, but without seeing us, and I don't know that there's that many antivirals out there, you know, antiviral drugs. And I'm nervous talking to you because it's not just the fact that I'm nervous on the air, I'm nervous about the whole thing.
Sure.
It cleared it out of our system really, really fast, but we were really sick.
Well, it bothers me that he would react just when you give him the symptoms and already know exactly what it was and know exactly what to prescribe. That's undoctor-like.
Very.
Usually they won't do a thing without seeing you.
Absolutely. And that spooked me out, too. And we had to have a friend go into the drugstore to pick up our prescription because we were so sick.
Wow.
We couldn't get out of bed. And ever since then, I've had pains throughout my legs, and I've had the same problem you had, Art, sneezing.
Yeah, really?
But I've never been allergenic before, and I just get these sneezing fits, and this is clear air here.
Yeah, I've never had an allergy in my life. Never.
Neither have I.
Never been bothered by allergies. And
I'm a smoker, too.
Yeah, same here. I've just never been bothered with allergies, but I will go into, it wakes me up in the middle of the night, and I'll go into these long sneezing fits, and then finally go in and clear out, you know, blow my nose like crazy, and then I can get back to sleep again.
Well, it hits me too that way, and it also hits me during the day. And the other thing I've run into is a problem with, ever since then, you know, the leg pains, and that's something I was wondering if William Thomas had ever heard about.
In other words, disassociated different kinds of pains as a result of all this, William?
Yes, unfortunately. I'm nodding my head to this conversation. One of the more recent symptoms of the chemtrails are hip problems and joint problems. And speaking of uncanny anticipation, the 1-800 I got flu numbers several months ago segued into 1-800 migraine numbers, and intense rip out your eyes migraines have been associated with the more recent chemtrails. I know just outside of Vancouver, Canada, near where I'm speaking, painkillers were being stripped from the drugstore shelves, and then we began seeing, you know, 1-800 migraine number. Now we're finding symptoms of the joint problems and stiff necks, other symptoms reminiscent of meningitis, and we are seeing meningitis vaccines being pushed and plugged on network television across the United States. You know, you have to wonder, is this a concerted effort to get people to take vaccines?
I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Good morning. Hello.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Do you remember the best of Art Bell? A few weeks ago, and the man was crying and telling us about the disaster that was going to happen.
Please remind me of that.
Are you referring to the Area 51?
Yes, he works at Area 51.
Right.
Okay, but he's no longer with us because he didn't protect himself in the right way. If he'll play that broadcast backwards at two different speeds, which I'm not allowed to say, he'll tell you about Plum Island, but this is the important thing. Remember this. Mound 17, that's M-O-U-N-D, 17 in Hawthorne, Nevada, is an old naval munitions depot.
Right.
Also, in Area 51, 4,787 people were executed there in 1966.
All right, well, I'm not sure how that relates to what we're talking about. I appreciate your call, but that many people, it seems to me, would be missed. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Dave in Denver.
Hi, Dave.
I was wondering if your guest had ever heard or read the novel Dust by Charles Pellegrino.
What is it?
It's a novel about a biological disaster.
The name of the novel is Dust?
Dust.
Okay.
And Charles Pellegrino, it's funny that this takes place on Long Island. And
it's funny, I was in the library yesterday looking for books by Charles Pellegrino because he's such an excellent writer, and that title didn't come up, so I thank you for this. I guess there was some sixth sense or intuition, which I place great store by the way, in my daily life, directing me to that author.
Yes, because he's, I guess he's been involved with the Titanic a lot, but this, it's really strange that what you're talking about, that this, it takes place in a laboratory on Long Island. He doesn't mention Plum Island, but it just talks about that all the insects start dying off in different little incidences throughout the world, and then they've got to figure out how to pollinate the plants because the plants start dying off after the insects.
Naturally. Of course they would.
It's a very scary novel. It's just...
I'll check it out myself. Sounds very interesting. All right, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And he's written an excellent book on Atlantis, and if I had my choice of bumper stickers art, it would be, "It looks like Atlantis all over again."
First time caller line. You're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Hello.
Hello. I'm on a cell, so I hope you can hear me well. I saw something about Y2K on a news show a couple of days ago. They said that when Y2K hits, the minute after midnight, you should not pick up your telephone, because if everybody does that, the phones won't work.
Well, that is absolutely correct. And that's good advice for everybody. If everybody did everything at once, obviously turned on their air conditioners all at once, the grid's going to go down. Picked up their telephones all at once, and the phone system is going to go down. None of these utilities are designed to take that kind of load all at once, period. A wild card line, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Yes, this is Dave in Phoenix.
Hello, Dave. You're going to have to yell at us.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm listening carefully. Fantastic show.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on your letter from the pilot. That sounded correct. And when he referred to takeoff and landing weights, is what he was talking about would be changed by how much fluid you put in the belly.
More exactly.
Obviously, yes.
Art, I love your new 2525 song. I was going to about fax you and tell you to put that one in permit.
It seems to fit.
Yeah, doesn't it, though? At any rate, I think you can skip publishing on the pilot and save him the hassle. Why don't we treat this like UFOs and just go and accept that it exists? It's obvious that we've got everything from pictures to testimonies. Yesterday in Phoenix, driving north to south, watched two guys go over and doing it at the southeast corner of the terminal control area here at Sky Harbor.
Doing what?
Spraying. And the day before, the night before, when he's got it too, I think. You had a poem from a guy and made it say he was right. And then we were up in Santa Fe about 3 weeks before that and really got it good up there on holiday. And the only thing I wonder about is the motivation side of it.
In other words, why?
Yeah, you kind of hit a point there, Art, because it violates the FTM principle, you know, follow the money.
Yeah.
If you... The population's dumbed down enough as it is by television, and a lack of interest for other reasons. I don't contradict what I'm saying about side effects of the chemical.
No, I'm with you all the way, sir. In other words, why would a government want to kill the goose that's laying the golden economic egg? That's the only part of all this that doesn't make sense. Stay where you are. William Thomas will be right back. I'm Art Bell. William Thomas, and we're talking about chemtrails and actually a lot more with you, and we're going to try to stick close to the phones one more time. I want to give out the information on William's books, so let's do that. He's got two of them. One of them is called Scorched Earth. There is a likely title for you. And the other is Bringing the War Home, and they both relate to what you've been hearing tonight. To order them, call 1-888-690-1277. That's 888-690-1277. If you are a member of the media or you have specific information for William, he does have an email address. It is Wilco, that's W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet, that's one word, islandnet, strungalltogether.com. Again, it's simple, W-I-L-C-O, Wilco, at islandnet.com. www.WilliamThomas.com. Once again, William Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you, Art. Art, I'd like to take a minute to answer a major objection which you raised, rightly so, to this argument of killing the goose and why a government would want to do this.
Yes.
I am, after some 10 months of research, in possession of enough documentation to state right now that it is aging populations that threaten to kill the golden goose. This is very worrisome to governments and particularly to corporations who have discounted the wisdom incorporated in elderly folks and look at these people as not contributing dollars to society, as useless eaters that must be supported and thereby threatening the corporate bottom line. And I am convinced more and more as I get into this research that we are looking at 70 years of research by the Rockefellers primarily, Merck Pharmaceutical, whose founder was the first head of the U.S. BioWar program, and other corporations and very large families to eliminate the useless eaters. And here's my hypothesis, and here is actually what I am seeing around the chemtrails.
Actually, the whole thing is rather hypothetical. I understand where you're going, but it is hypothetical, isn't it?
I don't think the AIDS outbreak could be called hypothetical.
No, actually, there was testimony with regard to AIDS in front of a Senate committee, I think it was, or a congressional committee, in which a scientist was asked if such a thing could be created that would destroy the human immune system. This was before AIDS ever occurred. This is all on the record, and he said yes.
Yes, Dr. MacArthur said yes in 1970, asked for $10 million, and it was given over for this research, which was successful in developing an HIV-type weapon. We know it was delivered by vaccine. We do not know whether that was inadvertently contaminated or deliberate. I'm looking at a book by Don Scott, who points out, Art, that fatalities among those infected by mycoplasma and brucellosis-derived bioweapons, and these are now in the general population, are about 4 to 5%.
Well, I know it's a trite phrase, but if you play with fire, eventually you get burned.
That's right. Well,
right.
Instead of a lot of dead bodies in the streets, we're finding a subtle increase in deaths, again, mostly among the elderly, according to nurses that are in touch with me on these hospital wards. And I am wondering if we are not seeing a inadvertent or deliberate targeting of the elderly.
Well, it's always true. It's always true with flu or whatever comes along, it mm-hmm. hits the young and the old the hardest.
That's right.
Always, right?
That's right.
All right. Back to the lines. First time caller line, you're on the air with Will Thomas. Hi.
Good day.
Good day. Are you in Australia?
Art. First of all, I'd just like to confirm the Espanola activity this summer. My family is from Espanola, and I was up there, and my family observed it. I didn't observe it. I was not there at the exact time.
Excuse me, sir. Where are you?
I'm from Toronto.
Toronto, all right.
Yes, my name's Gord. I'm from Toronto. I'm a scientist. I'm retired now. I work in metallurgy, geology, and mineralogy for my career. But the thing I really wanted to mention was I've been on top of this West Nile thing since September the 3rd. I saw it as something really fishy. And I started investigating, and I thought I was the only one who was on it until I heard Will tonight.
Right.
What I wanted to bring out, which he hasn't brought out, is this whole business of emerging viruses, which I've examined rather closely, and I've got to say, I think that's a lot of hooey. This emerging virus thing seems to be more of a cover than a reality.
So you think they're emerging, but they're not emerging?
They're emerging from labs.
Yeah, emerging from labs.
That's where they're emerging from. If you look at it very closely, they cite several factors as being dominant in the emerging scenario: the changing global climate, the increase in air traffic, and the disturbance of jungles by man's activity bringing these things to the surface and whatnot. Now, if you look at that closely, Vietnam was a jungle that was severely disturbed And there's a lot of air traffic out of there. There was no emerging viruses. Very strange. You think they could emerge from Vietnam, but they didn't. I think the reason was they didn't know how to emerge back then. We hadn't invented the methodology for these viruses to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly we didn't have any. If you look at the climatological thing, all that really is a shift of a fraction of a degree upwards in average annual
temperatures. That's right, yes.
It doesn't amount to a environmental change that would allow, say, an AIDS-like virus or a monkey virus or an Ebola virus to exist in, say, Toronto or northern Finland. And yet you're getting those diseases up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've always had terrible diseases coming out of jungles, but they don't spread. People go there, they get them, and they get infected. But
of course, one might argue we live in the jet age now.
Yes, but Vietnam was in the jet age also.
Yes, it was.
And there's a lot of jets going along here. We just don't get that sort of thing happening. And when these viruses come into these new territories, they generally don't infect populations. This is an entirely new phenomenon. What is it? Has viruses suddenly learned to do something different?
Those are all very valid questions, sir, and I'm sure you agree, Will.
I do, and it's a very important point, and I'm delighted that this has been brought up. It must be aired publicly. If we look at the Mycoplasma fermentans going around with Gulf War illness now in the population, the new pneumonias, AIDS, chronic fatigue, respiratory distress, lupus, meningitis, these outbreaks are occurring in the wake of chemtrails and otherwise. And if we look behind them, we find in most cases Mycoplasma, and we find U.S. patent 5242820, awarded September 7, 93 to Dr. Lowe, working for the U.S. military, by the way, linking all of these outbreaks and diseases with Mycoplasma. If we look at Mycoplasma experimentation,
yes,
in the Huntsville prison among the inmates there in 68, we find more than 230 nearby residents living around the prison stricken with CFIDS, MS, lupus, fibromyalgia, cancers, meningitis, Epstein-Barr, exactly the diseases we're seeing again in the wake of the chemtrails, and all of them linked to Mycoplasma. Mycoplasma has been looked at and played with by the bioweaponeers since the 1970s, since the Vietnam era, and I agree with the caller tonight. These are primarily escaped from labs, and they are escaped from vaccines, and they are in no way natural.
Yeah, I think what he said was they're emerging from labs, not simply emerging.
Correct. Correct. And Dr. Garth Nicholson, who along with his wife Nancy Nicholson discovered the Mycoplasma in Gulf War illness, has agreed with me in correspondence that these outbreaks worldwide are not naturally occurring.
Okay, let's keep moving. Wildcard line, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Am I on?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've got your ender. The music that you play, bumper music, you've collected it for the past 100 years, roughly. Now,
yeah.
You are a sentient computer, and you respond to this musical input.
That's right.
And that's the way with all of us. When you go outside tonight after you've completed the show, you go out, you look up at the sky, and you'll see that that we're sitting in a big omnidome. And that omnidome, on the first of the year, is going to open up. And we're going to all be exposed to most beautiful music that you've ever heard. Now, I could give you a whole bunch of enders like that if you, I could give you 5 hours of enders.
No. We'll settle for that one. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm a big fan of music. It's a mood changer. It's a mood alterer. East of the Rockies, you're on air with William Thomas and Art Bell.
Hello, Art. I've been an avid listener of yours for nine years.
Nigh on to. All right, sir.
Yeah. My name is Blair. I'm in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yes, sir.
And statement I made to you earlier. The possible reasoning behind the contrails is that we haven't had a good war in a long time, and it could be the United States or the government's, not the United States, but the government's way of controlling population.
Well, I think that's what William's been saying.
And I also witnessed a contrail last spring. The plane did a U-turn over Little Rock.
Yep, I've seen the same thing. Exactly. As a matter of fact, I did better than that. I photographed it, and I got the photographs up on my website. So, yes, you know, something's going on. There's absolutely, whether it's as William has suggested right down the line or as yet unknown, something is definitely going on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art. It's Cordelia from Missoula, Montana.
Welcome.
I have a question for William. I have SIFIDs, and we have a telephone tree going. We've had an awful lot of chemtrails over Missoula, and what we have noticed, those of us with SIFIDs have noticed, we've had an awful lot of bronchial stuff, tremendous coughing and tightness in the chest, coughing so much that you almost vomit. Have you heard of this, William?
I haven't heard of it in relation to your illness. No, I haven't.
But I mean, in relation to the chemtrails?
Oh, absolutely. And okay. I would suggest to you and to many others to get checked out for mycoplasma, and if tested positive, doxycycline treatments, again pioneered by Dr. Garth Nicholson, can be effective in about 95% of cases. But you must be checked positive before you take antibiotics of that dosage and that duration.
Right. Thank you.
If you go to a doctor and you say you want to be checked out for that, will most doctors do it or not?
I believe they'll do it, Art. I believe it's also somewhat expensive. And if people can get to Dr. Garth Nicholson's website, I'm sorry it's not in front of me, I should have it. He is offering kits for blood testing for the mycoplasma. But yes, it can be done, I'm not sure of the cost.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas and not a lot of time. Hi.
Yes, good evening, Art. When I was in 68 in the military, the shamrock on the airplanes was the agency out of MENA. And my daughter has had the worst asthma. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. She's nearly died from it. She's been hospitalized. Ever since in the last year, it has gone off the boards.
I know.
That's my statement.
All right. Well, I'll just take it at face value. I know it has. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Yes, Art. To put this whole encephalitis situation into context, I live in Westchester County. We were sprayed recently.
Right.
People should be aware of the fact that encephalitis outbreaks have occurred in the northeastern United States for as long as there's been, you know, Europeans here.
Not this stuff, though.
Well, you know, Art, diseases do mutate over time. The movie The Awakening, I believe it was called, with Robert De Niro and Robin Williams, was based on a real-life story about the encephalitis outbreak in New York back, I believe, in the 1930s.
Right.
So, it you know, yellow fever, malaria have occurred even in the Northeast. So, you know, we should just place this all, I think, in a historical context.
Yes, but I have heard the scientists, you know, really well-qualified scientists who are working on this say that they have no idea how West Nile could have showed up in this mutated form in North America. No idea at all. I mean, they're genuinely puzzled about this. It doesn't seem logical.
Well, there was even a lot of problems of identifying it. Some people said West Nile, some people said St. Louis.
Yep.
There's a lot of gray area.
Yeah, and that's because it has mutated, either naturally or by the hand of man. We don't know. Something's going on. William, we have come to the end of the program. All I can say is thank you, and of course you'll be back again. And as the story develops, William, my door is open. You know that.
Art, thank you very much for this opportunity, and I want to thank the many people who have supported my work and my research. I spoke for many of you tonight, and in some of your voices, thank you all very much.
Okay, my friend, that's it. Good night.
Good night, Art.
And from the high desert, That, in fact, is it. Good night to you all. See you tomorrow night. It's going to be an interesting program tomorrow night. I think you're going to enjoy it, so be here. From the high desert, ciao.